SBS Radio. Vous êtes avec Radio SBS en français.
We have the great pleasure of welcoming on the French language program Robert McLean, who is the author of Castaway. Welcome to SBS French, Robert.
Thank you, Jean-Noël. I'm very, very pleased to be here.
So we're talking about Castaway, the story of Narcisse Pelletier, the young French boy who, at the age of 14 years, is shipwrecked on Cape York in 1858. And the book is published by Hachette Australia. Perhaps to start off, what prompted you to write Castaway?
Well, it was not until about 3 years ago that I actually learned the broad outline of the story. I'm a Queenslander and an historian, and I was shocked and amazed to discover that this had occurred. And I was told about it by the assistant to Noel Pearson, the Aboriginal leader of the Cape York area. And I was absolutely thrilled to hear it, because at that same time, 1858 to 1875, when Narcisse was with the Night Island people on Cape York, that was the period of the terrible British frontier war against the Aboriginal people. And so I decided to tell those two stories in parallel. On the one hand, showing what the British were doing to the Aboriginal people, and on the other hand, the manner in which the Aboriginals welcomed Narcisse Pelletier, the stranger, into their clan, and looked after him for all that time.
So tell us a bit about Narcisse, who grows up in the village of Saint-Gilles, and in 1857, in July, he leaves for Marseille on the St. Paul with a cargo of wine, and then they travel to this part of the world.
Yes, so they went to Bombay in India, and then to Hong Kong. And there they unloaded the last of their cargo, and they took on some 317 Chinese prospectors who were coming to Australia for the gold rush at that time. And because they had such a large number of people on the ship, Emmanuel Pinard, the captain, decided to take a shortcut and go to the east of the Philippines and just to the east of New Guinea. But when he got to New Guinea, in a great big fog, there was very bad weather, and he smashed into the rocks and crashed the ship. And everyone got off the ship, but there was no way that he could continue with the Chinese. And so he left them behind and set off in the longboat with some of his crew, including Narcisse Pelletier. And after a very long journey across the Coral Sea, some 1,200 kilometres, they reached Cape York, looked for water, and Narcisse was not well. He had been hit on the head, and he was not completely well. But I'm afraid that Pinard left him, abandoned him, on that beach, and rode away with the rest of his crew in the longboat. And he also abandoned the Chinese, of course, and they were all but one were murdered and indeed eaten by cannibals on the Rossel Islands. So it was a tragic story to begin with, but once Narcisse was accepted into the Aboriginal tribe, age 14, then he absolutely flowered, and he became very much a part of that community.
So yes, because you're right, he immerses himself in the culture, changing, adapting, becoming, and lives an idyllic life for the next 17 years.
That's correct, yes. Well, you know, they lived on the sand beach, you know, just between the water on the one hand and the bush on the other. So they had the best of all possible worlds, you know. They lived on fish and on the one hand, shellfish on the others, the most beautiful oysters and crayfish. And yet they also, in different times, they were able to use the wallabies and the kangaroos and so on for their food on land. So they had a really beautiful time.
Narcisse takes an Aboriginal name.
He does indeed. It was called, it was given to him, it was Amglo, A-M-G-L-O, Amglo. And this really, his personality changed so much that he really saw himself, he really felt himself to be this person after such a long time living in, complete harmony with the Aboriginal people. And he even, I have to say, he even lost his capacity. He lost his language. He lost his French language. And it took him a few months for that to return to him once he was taken off the sand beach by some British sailors who came by in 1875.
And as you mentioned at the beginning, at the same time, there was the brutal frontier wars in Queensland with prospectors flooding in as well. What was the role of the native mounted police?
The native mounted police, which was basically a government organisation with white fellows, white men as the officers and the NCOs, and some Aboriginal men from the south in their community. Their job was to protect the settlers from Aboriginal people as they moved, as they invaded, basically, the Aboriginal lands. But very soon thereafter, they took it into their own heads, that is to say, the leaders of the police, to not only protect the settlers, but to attack the native people, to attack the Aboriginal people, usually at dawn, and the massacres which occurred right throughout Queensland are a living shame to the colonial British administration. And we never really have been able to confront this, because this is hidden history in Australia, and it is... When I researched it, I discovered that it's only very recently that... our academic historians have been able to find out the true stories, and only now is the general community able to read and to hear these stories from historians and people like myself.
And how did Amglo, Narcisse, live through that tense period of Australian history?
Well, the interesting thing was that the area that he lived in was so remote that they didn't actually arrive in that area until he had left. He departed, as we know, in 1875, but they didn't actually come to that area until the 1880s.
Let's jump to 1875, when Narcisse is taken away, Amglo is taken away and goes back to France. How did he cope on the journey back to France?
Not too bad, because he found in Noumea, in Caledonia, a French soldier who was very, very helpful to him. He just found the most difficult element of it was the weather. Everywhere he went was cold, much, much colder than he had been used to for these 17 years living in the tropics. And he found that very difficult. But so he sent some letters home, which reached his family well before he arrived. And his mother, who had worn her black dress ever since he had left, and had never really given up hope that she would one day find him. But when she first heard the story that he had been living this 17 years with the Aboriginal people, whom the French people at that time simply regarded as savages, she could hardly believe it. She really could hardly believe it. And Narcisse himself had lost all track of time. He thought that he'd been there for very much longer than 17 years, and he thought all his family will have died. And so he was astonished to discover that they were all still alive. And when they got back together, there was a joyous reunion. But very soon it became clear that he had changed so much that they have found it very, very difficult to communicate with each other. In fact, the family arranged for him to have an exorcism from the local priest. Yes. And that was a terrible experience for him.
As you mentioned, he is forced to undergo an exorcism, and people wanted to hear his story as well, how he became, I quote, a sauvage blanc.
Yes, that's right. In fact, they offered him the opportunity to go on stage in on the stage in Paris and to tell that story, but he was really unable to do that because Jean-Noël, the difference between France at that time and the Aboriginal experience was like a different universe. You know, there was really no connecting experience or words that could explain one from the other. I mean, the family asked him such things as, did you speak to the king of the Aboriginal people? Did you pray to the Virgin all this time? And he couldn't explain to them that, he had been married twice. He had children. He had been in battles with the Aboriginal people against their enemies. I mean, it was a different world entirely, and terribly, terribly difficult for him to get that message across. And so the French government, I must say, came to his aid in a curious way. It made sense to them, I'm sure. They gave him the opportunity to be a lighthouse keeper at Saint Nazaire, and that, in a sense, was a very, very sensible thing to do. But in another way, it meant that he spent his life there, looking out across the sea to where he really wanted to be, across the great oceans, to his family that he had left behind in Australia.
So eventually he dies of a mental and physical breakdown.
He does. It was a little bit like we call PTSD now, the soldiers after the war. He was a divided soul, you know. He was French, but he was also Aboriginal. Yeah, so it was a very, very difficult time for him, and he really just faded away. He did actually get married
in France.
But that did not produce any children, and I don't think it was a happy marriage.
And what do we know what became of his children that grew up in Australia?
I wish we did, but unfortunately we don't. And the reason is that when the missionaries and the government people arrived in that area, they put three different tribes all together, and they brought in Christianity, and it was a little like, an invasion where everything that had gone before was all messed up in the minds of the people, and so in the generations since that time, that history of their world has been lost, except for a magnificent Australian anthropologist who went there in 1925, and he did some magnificent work. And it was because of that work that he did, when they still were living a tribal life, that I was able to recreate those 17 years in my book. And I really, truly hope that it will soon be translated into French.
And there was a lot of contribution by other people for Castaway, and I think of Stephanie Anderson that you've mentioned in the book.
And as you say, there were so many people who have looked at this story, and mostly they've been academics like Stephanie. My concern was to tell the story to as broad an audience as I possibly could, because I think it's terribly important that we know as Australians just the way our Aboriginal compatriots lived, because only in that way can we really live and work and properly get together. Because for all this time, there's been a veil of silence drawn over that period.
And I imagine the project consumed you day and night. And do you think enough is being done to encourage the learning of Australian history in schools?
Well, the true Australian history, you know, we were taught history, but it was the British history of Australia, not the Australian history of Australia, which is a very different thing. It's only now that we've been able, only now that we're being able to follow the work of people like the great Henry Reynolds and Noel Lewes and Timothy Bottoms, and now myself, in bringing that true story to the Australian people. It's almost like there was a conspiracy of silence until these last few years. And that's a very long time. That's more than 200 years of silence about something that I think the British should be terribly ashamed of.
It's been fascinating speaking with you. And I remind the listeners that you are touring the Alliance Française cultural centres around Australia to talk about the book Cast Away. Are there any other writing projects for you?
I never stop with my writing projects, but this is my 29th book, but it is clearly the book that I adore so much. It is the culmination of all of my experience and all of my talent to be able to put this together, because I think it's a terribly important story and it must be told.
Robert MacLean, thank you so much for coming on to the French Language Programme, and I remind the listeners that Cast Away is published by Hachette Australia.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much.
Vous êtes avec Radio SBS en français.
Hear more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.